What's up, everyone? It's Michael Scotto, HoopsHype.com's NBA writer and host of the Hoops Hype podcast. Coming up on this episode, we're going to get into a lot of Brad Beal conversation. And to do that, I wanted to get in touch with some of the Athletic guys. They have a lot of talented writers there. And also Fred Katz. We couldn't get any of those guys, so I got Fred instead. Fred is considered a mensch. To others in our group chat with John Hollinger, John Krasinski, Mike Schmidt, myself, and also Fred Katz, that's debatable. But I love him. He's a great guy, and I wanted to bring him on and talk about the Wizards. He covers them for The Athletic. It is Fred Katz. Fred, how are you, brother?
Well, if I was feeling good about this this podcast before, I don't know how I'm feeling about it now, but I am as well as one can be these days, is what I'll say. I'm good. Everybody's healthy. I get to watch basketball every day. Things could be worse.
Well said. I certainly hear you on that. You know I love you, and that's why I wanted to bring you on. I can't speak for Hollinger, Krasinski, and Schmidt, but I think they do too. Behind the scenes, sources say. I wanted to talk to you, especially last night after that Nets and Wizards game. Recording this on Monday, February 1, and Brad Beal's body language. I haven't seen body language talked about more since the Kid Ink song that came out. And so, you know, I'm watching the game, and obviously, you know, it didn't look good. You know, I texted with a couple of executives, some scouts, and, you know, one executive in the East told me when we were texting, he said, "Damn, that's unbelievable. Red flags everywhere." Another scout whose opinion I trust and who's been in the league for probably over a decade at this point just texted me that it was really bad. He looks like he's done with them. And that was the first half. Now, let's be clear, you know, I know that he turned it on in the second half and Washington won. But when you're looking at that and you're watching the game as well as I am, covering the Wizards for The Athletic, what's going through your mind?
What's going through my mind is it must be an NBA TV game. Because for the last, ever since I've been covering the Wizards, which is 2.5 years, the narrative around Beal has been, when is he no longer going to be a Wizard? And he extended in October of 2019, a mix, you know, I think much to the surprise of many people, but pretty much including myself. I mean, I wasn't shocked that he extended at the time that he did, but I wasn't betting that he would at the time. So this has been a thing around Beal forever. The national narrative around Beal has been, when is he going to be out? And he's just never really expressed that he wants to be at any point, including now. As a matter of fact, he's expressed the opposite. He's chosen to stay with the organization. He's extended when he didn't have to, those sorts of things. Once or twice or three times a year when the Wizards end up on NBA TV, because Lord knows they're not getting a TNT game or an ESPN game. And a couple times a year, the Wizards will end up on an NBA TV game and Beal's body language will be weird because that's just what he looks like a lot of the time. He slouches, hands at the side. Him not running back on defense has been a thing for a couple of years now. It's just kind of part of his game. And NBA Twitter gets going.
Well, if he's doing that every – I got to be honest with you though, Fred. Like if he's doing that every game, you know, it did scream a little bit James Harden to some people I had spoken to. And you bring up a valid point. You know, publicly he has, you know, stated that he wants to be there. And he showed that with the extension. I understand that. Don't get me wrong there 100%. What I will say though is that sometimes – actions speak louder than words. And, you know, I totally understood his frustration throwing the ball up against the sanction under the basket when, you know, they couldn't stop a nosebleed. I got that completely. When he's on the bench and he's sitting away from the huddle, I think it was somebody else that covers the Wizards. I forget who, but someone had put out the theory that, like, oh, well, you know, he didn't want to carry the team and he wanted to see them do it without. Because I think they've lost their last 10 games when he scored over 40 or more.
And, yeah, that's right.
And so I'm not here. And I'm sorry. I'm not here for necessarily this, like, you know, Mr. Miyagi theory here of, oh, I'm going to make them better and show them this way. It looked like a guy to me that was a little fed up at the moment. And that, you know, that happens with everybody. Don't get me wrong. But if you're saying that this body language is going on and it's, you know, it just happened to be that it was a TNT game, I mean, excuse me, an NBA TV game, that's not exactly great either. And to that end, you know, it's not going to diminish his value. I mean, I've certainly gotten that sense from executives and, you know, you mentioned it and that the Wizards aren't necessarily looking to move him. I've gotten that same sentiment as well. You know, coming into the year, they thought with re-signing Bertans, and this is to my knowledge, you could speak to it as well, but to my knowledge, you know, with them re-signing Bertans, trading for Russell Westbrook, and reuniting him with Scott Brooks, hoping that he can recapture that MVP form or some form of it, you know, at least an all-star level player, pair him with Brad Beal. They thought they were a playoff team in the East and as high as six in the conference, according to some people that I spoke to in the organization going into the season. That was their hope. It hasn't turned out like that. Thomas Bryant gets hurt. From your sense, what's the vibe right now over there with all of this going on?
I mean, they're frustrated. They're frustrated without question. And to be clear, when I talk about the Beal body language and that kind of stuff, it has moments where you're like, whoa, what the hell is going on? I'm not implying that, like, that first quarter when he took zero shots was just the norm every single day. But he goes in and out. And my impression is I've had this conversation so many times in 2.5 years where every 6 months, somebody says to me, I saw his body language. He looked frustrated. He was sitting on the side of the court and he had a towel over his head and he looked so down. He looked fed up. He must want out. And I say, Brad hasn't said he wants out. The team doesn't want to trade him. I at this point, that's been the case for long enough that I just am going to continue to believe that until I explicitly hear at least hints of otherwise. And all I'm hearing, and this isn't just from conversations with, you know, people close to Beal and that kind of stuff. This is conversations with people from other teams who call up the Wizards because the league is having, I mean, the league sees what's happening here. The Wizards are 4-12. Beal's a free agent after in the summer of 2022. Mm-hmm. The league sees him as the next guy to get traded, the natural next guy after Harden. And by the way, I think the big difference and why I don't necessarily agree with the Harden comparison with the on-court comportment and that kind of stuff, Harden had demanded a trade and won it out, and the Rockets weren't doing it. So that was Harden's way of saying, okay, like, I don't want to be here. Do something about it right now. That's not the case with Beal. If it is the case with Beal and he does want out, he hasn't made it clear to the team that he does. So I think that's a big difference, and it's a distinction worth making between those two situations. They're frustrated as an organization. They're frustrated as a team. Russell Westbrook has been, you know, playing, not looking like himself for the majority of the year. He really didn't look like the Russell Westbrook we know until that Nets game when he had 41 on Sunday night and really had an incredible performance and hit the game-winning three. He's been nursing a quad injury for a lot of the year. Their defense is one of the worst in the league for, you know, what, the third straight season. It's 29th right now, I think, in points allowed per possession, and that's the third straight year that they're bottom four if this keeps up in defense, which is just no way to go about winning. I don't care how many points you're able to score. You're second to last in defense. You're not going to be good. you're not going to be good when you're that bad defensively. So there are a lot of problems. They also got ravaged by COVID worse than any other team in the league. They had six guys who were out in health and safety protocols, and they had six games suspended because of that. And then they came back and they didn't have close to a full roster. They lost Thomas Bryant to an ACL. So they've had some bad luck. They've been one of the worst crunch time teams in the league. All that being said, like, ultimately, their struggles are on them. They're on the inability to defend. At times, the kind of nonsensical lineups they put out there, the for an offense that can look really good, they also have moments where they can go stagnant too, maybe with not enough shooters on the floor and that kind of stuff. And Davis Bertans is, he showed up not well conditioned on a minutes restriction, didn't play 5-on-5 over the offseason, ended up coming late to training camp because he had visa issues, and the Wizards just gave him $80 million to be a dependable guy, and he's coming off the bench and was one of the best shooters in the world last year, had a historic three-point shooting season, shooting 32-33% from three right now. So much has gone wrong with the organization, and they're frustrated. There's no question they're frustrated. As Beal always says, of course I'm frustrated. Am I supposed to be happy that we're losing? But I don't think, at least to this point, I can't tell the future. It could happen. I just don't think we're at the point right now where Beal has said, I won out. It hasn't happened yet. And I also don't get the impression that teams around the league expect it to happen. I think the general expectation around the league is that it should happen, but that it's not coming.
To that point, as I mentioned to you and texting with some execs yesterday, they got the sense that unless he demanded a trade, it would probably go into the summer at this point. In the off season.
I agree with that.
And so, but with that in mind, so what's my next question to them is, okay, well, if it does, whenever it is, at some point this is going to come to a head. And if he does either demand the trade or they look to explore it one way or the other, what's his value? So here are some of the thoughts that I got back. From one exec, he was saying a whole bunch of picks. I think that they could also try to have another team take a bad contract with them as well. I think it'd be somewhere in between the Drew Holiday and James Harden trade. Harden was an MVP scoring champ. In terms of talent, he's in between both of them. Another one said to me, if you look at the last couple of trades, depending on the players going back, I would imagine two or three first round picks and potentially pick swaps as well. That's kind of the same sense I would have thought on my own, is that, you're looking at somewhere, because his contract, as you touched on, is going to be next season, $34.5 million. And then after that, he's got a player option for the 2022-2023 season at 37. So you're not necessarily getting him as long as Harden, but you would be getting him more around the same time as Drew Holiday, who commanded a big deal. Brad Beal has morphed into a bona fide all-star. We know that. He's going to command a lot back. So that's what I'm looking to see is, as you touched on, I don't think necessarily it's a question of if. I think it's when. Unless, if they can convince him otherwise, then that's fine. But even with a healthy Westbrook and you got Bertans back, I just don't see this massive ceiling with Washington. I think, as you know, those guys and I had said earlier in the year, if they got to the sixth seed and, Thomas Bryant was healthy and everything was aces, yeah, that would have been the ceiling. How much better can they get than that in the East? I don't know, looking ahead, unless they made some moves.
Yeah, I mean, I'm seeing the same thing as you when I watch them play. No, I don't see a massive ceiling at all. I think it's important to remember that when we talk about the organization's interest in holding on to him, it's not their interest in holding on to him for the next year and a half. It's their interest in holding on to him beyond the next year and a half. Like, they feel like they wouldn't be handling it this way if they didn't feel like they had a really legitimate chance to resign him, during his 2022 free agency. Otherwise, they would be handling this situation differently. I mean, something that's important to the context of all of this is that Beal is kind of like a Lillard kind of guy. You know, the stuff you and I don't know Lillard personally, so I'm just going off of what I read with Jason Quick and, you know, how the interviews that I see Lillard give and all of that. And Lillard is a big guy on, you know, he sees the value, the personal value. I'm not moralizing staying with one franchise or leaving in free agency. He believes that there's inherent value in being able to stay with one franchise. And Beal is a similar guy. I know he really, like, he loves that Dirk title in 2011 when Dirk stayed with the Mavs his whole career, fought, and ended up getting a title in year 13. The Wizards are not close to winning a title, by the way. But that's why he's given, amongst many other things, why he's given the Wizards the shot that he has. That's his mentality. He believes in that kind of loyalty. I think he wants the kind of standing with one franchise that Dirk has in Dallas or that Lillard is going to have in Portland. And by the way, Beal is a huge fan of Lillard. And my personal evaluation of that is not just because they're Lillard's an awesome player and is fun to watch. I think they approach basketball with a similar kind of mentality. And there's no right or wrong way to do it. That's just what he believes. That's how he thinks. He's told me quotes before about how he hates super team culture, just right there on the record that, you know, I've written and I'll have a piece up about, you know, Beal trade stuff on Tuesday morning, which is going to have some of those quotes that he's given me over the years. I mean, I know guys say this stuff and then they end up changing their minds. And that's plausible. Like, I don't think Bradley Beal wants to lose for the rest of his career. I just think all things being equal, he'd rather win in Washington than win elsewhere. And while the entire rest of the world has made up their minds that he's not going to win in Washington, I don't think Beal has. And I think that ultimately that's kind of what this whole situation comes down to. Beal has to make up his decision, his mind on that. And the organization, I just don't see making a move if Beal isn't going to force their hand.
I could understand that for sure. You don't want to necessarily give up a guy like Beal, who, by the way, is younger than Harden when he got traded. Andrew Holiday, Beal's 27 right now. Certainly, in the prime of his career.
Let me jump in with this too. People talk about the haul that they could get if they traded Beal, and I agree with everything you said, but I'll put in a caveat. I think in order to evaluate the haul you can get for Beal, before you do that, the first step is asking what would the Wizards want for Beal, and I like what kind of package, and I don't know the answer to that because they're not at that stage yet.
Well, you know? Let me say this to you, though, Fred. I'll tell you this. You know, being around Brooklyn here, you know, my home borough, you know, there was a time period where, you know, internally the Nets had discussed, well, and obviously this was before the James Harden trade, for a while now, that what would it be if, you know, if we tried to package Caris LeVert and Jared Allen and somewhat similar to the trade that they did for Harden. Now, I'm not sure about all of those pick swaps for Bradley Beal. Let's be clear on that. But that type of package centered around a guy in Caris LeVert, who at the time was on the verge of somewhere in the conversation of, oh, he could be an all-star at some point. And Jared Allen, who's a center that is valued around the league and a guy that is on the upswing for sure and was a really nice young asset. And they had plenty of first round picks, as you saw, given in the James Harden trade. And from Washington's standpoint, you know, I touched on it with a few of them theoretically behind the scenes of what, you know, would that have interest? And I did not get that vibe that it would. So to your point, if that type of a trade package scenario didn't float their boat for a guy like Brad Beal at the time, and he's only gotten better since then. Okay, this is a guy averaging 35 points a game and is definitely going to be an all-star this year unless that gets screwed up like it did last year. But he should be. So if that wasn't enough then, and what's the package going to be now? It would have to be more than that. And it's going to be trying to evaluate which teams around the league are going to have that package. You know all 29 of them, other than Washington, of course, if they had any common sense, was probably hitting up Tommy Shepard during that game, you know, sliding in the DMs. You know how it is. Everybody's a thirsty dog out there. So, you know. That,
yeah, no, I mean, you're right. I mean, it also kind of depends. I mean, look, the Wizards have been an organization that have historically prioritized making the playoffs above breaking it down. I mean, Ted Leonsis is the owner who famously said, at least famously in Washington, "I will never, ever tank." That is a direct Ted Leonsis quote from 2 years ago. Now, he's kind of made amendments to that statement ever since, and he's kind of said that he changed. But at the same time, the Wizards were coming off a 25-47 season and spent the offseason trying to upgrade. Now, they didn't make moves that destroyed their future necessarily, but they were trying to win. They were fighting for a low playoff seed. They're a team that would rather have a low playoff seed than tank organizationally. That's how they operate. And so normally you'd say, all right, if you arrive at a situation where you're going to trade Beal, okay, let's hear out New Orleans. They have young players, tons of picks. Let's hear out Golden State. They have James Wiseman. They have the Minnesota pick. Let's hear out, you know, run through. Denver has Michael Porter Jr. Atlanta has a lot of young players and they have some picks. Like, let's hear out these teams. The Knicks have a lot of picks. Let's do that. Or you could say, let's see if we can get Ben Simmons. And those are two completely different directions. I don't know which one the Wizards would choose. They appeal to two different kinds of approaches. Ben Simmons is young, but he's already on his max deal, and he's already a very good player. But the fit would be weird with Westbrook, obviously. And at that point, you don't have him for as long.
But you're not worrying about Westbrook at that point, to me. I hear you on that, because Westbrook's also in a similar contract situation as Beal. You know, Westbrook's getting $44 million next year and then has the $47 million player option for the 2022-2023 season. But to me, at that point, you're not thinking about Westbrook. You're thinking about the future of your organization. And I don't know if necessarily, you know, if they get Simmons or younger guys, Westbrook going to be in that conversation long term for them? I wouldn't think so based on timeline.
Well, I agree with you with most deals. The reason I bring up Westbrook with Simmons is because if you trade for Simmons, you're trading for a guy who's like if you trade for Wiseman, you trade for picks, you trade for young guys who are on their rookie contracts, you are trading for guys who you have team control over for a really long time. You trade for Simmons, like you gotta win with Ben Simmons, or else we're having the same conversation that we're having about Beal, about Ben Simmons, like a year later, right? Because then Ben Simmons is approaching his unrestricted free agency. And if you're not winning with Simmons, then you've got a problem. So that's why I say the packages are different, even though Simmons is the same age as a lot of these guys who you might trade for on rookie contracts. It's more about how long you have team control over guys and that kind of stuff than it is necessarily about age, upside, and all of that. Because ultimately, when you're trying to build a team, you're not just trying to get good young players. You're trying to hold on to good young players. So I think Simmons fits into a different organizational approach than getting, you know, rookie contract guys and picks would. I don't know which direction they would choose to go in. We're not at that point yet, like I said, but I do think it's important to make that distinction when you talk about what they could get.
I'll say this last thing as far as what I think would have to be included in that trade. You know, I certainly can see a scenario where at the end of the deal, Tommy Shepard ends it with, "And can you also take the contract of Fred Katz? We gotta see what we could do with that guy." I know that I can't wait until after that trade. You know, if they ever do trade Brad Beal, and you know that there's gonna be a look at it from the eyes of executives on Hoops Hype. Oh man, I know John Hollinger would be banging the drum to be the anonymous executive, former executive, being like, "Hey, I would have tried to move Fred Katz's contract too," but
banging the drum, I guarantee you he would tweet that without you saying a thing to him.
But with that in mind, you know, in an ideal world, they want to keep Beal. With that said, I wanted to ask you too about they're not meeting expectations this year. And at some point, usually somebody's got to pay the price for that. So with that in mind, you're looking at the future after the season, you know, with Scott Brooks as head coach and that Wizards front office, which of those two or both could potentially be on the hot seat at the end of this year? You know, they made the trade for Wall. They traded Wall for Westbrook. And that reunion hasn't gone to plan, partly because of Westbrook being injured. You know, who's getting the blame here if this continues the way the season has? Is it Brooks? Is it the front office? And are either one of them or both on the hot seat, Fred?
It could be anyone. I mean, I never know whether someone is on the hot seat or approaching the hot seat or near the hot seat or how hot their seat is. I never know how to measure that. What I will say is Scott Brooks is in the last year of his deal. His team is 4-12. They went 25-47 last year. They were better than people expected last year, but they are certainly not better than they organizationally expected this year. He's been there for 5 years. And I don't think that you can say that any coach who is in the last year of his deal hasn't gotten an extension and whose team has the worst winning percentage in the NBA right now is completely safe. I don't think you can say that. Now, in terms of being out in the middle of the year, something that I will put into context for this is that Scott Brooks makes $7 million this year. And Ted Leonsis, the Wizards owner, just furloughed or laid off 40% of his company's employees. 232 out of approximately 600 employees have been furloughed. That was a few months ago. So I don't know what the desire would be to pay someone $7 million or just the remaining millions on a contract not to work for him. I can't imagine he would be that enthusiastic about that. I also don't think it's, quite honestly, I think this is an organization that thinks about optics and that kind of stuff. And I don't think the optics are there to pay somebody that much when you just furloughed that many people not to work for you in the middle of an economic crisis, in the middle of a pandemic. So I think that's just a real world thing. I know some fans don't like to hear that kind of stuff, but that's just a real world thing. And it's one of the real life effects on, you know, an organization, you know, like you've seen this kind of stuff. So I'm not predicting that anybody is out per se. And historically, Leonsis is very loyal as well. He stands by his guys. He employed Ernie Grunfeld for 16 years. I mean, he's historically loyal, but I definitely am not going to say that a coach who's coaching the team with the worst record in the league that had expectations coming into the year and who's on the last year of his deal is safe. I don't think I can go that far.
What about, and just to wrap up on that topic, what about in terms of management? Because correct me if I'm wrong, aren't a lot of those guys, including Tommy Shepard, in the last year of their deal as well?
Yeah, I think that's right. I don't know what's going to happen with management. There are a million murmurs about management. I don't know what direction they're going to go in it, to be honest, yet. I don't think there's been an organizational decision made yet in either direction. But Leonsis took forever to make that Tommy Shepard hire. I mean, that was 3.5 months that Shepard was the interim. He fired Ernie Grunfeld the very beginning of April and went on a very, very long hire. So Leonsis's hiring process, I should say, it was about 3.5 months long. Shepard got the job around the end of July was when he officially got the job after they interviewed a number of candidates and a number of external people and had a search firm. So I don't know where we are yet with management, to be honest, but based on Leonsis's history, I imagine that whatever the result ends up being or whatever his decision ends up being, it's I feel like it could, the process could end up looking similar to it did the last time. I think he just looked at candidates 2 years ago. He's got an idea of what the layout is amongst front office people, you know?
Yeah, and with that said, you know, if they go a different direction, one guy I'm sure you could probably bank on hearing his name out there in some form would probably be Masai Ujiri. We've certainly heard it with the Knicks and over the years. And, you know, whether it's for leverage or not, ultimately, you know, certainly when it comes to executive openings, his name always seems to find its way out there. And for good reason, obviously, with building the Toronto Raptors. But, Fred, I always appreciate talking with you. I miss seeing you at the arena, brother. It was a pleasure to chat with you and talk Beal and the Wizards with you.
Yes, always great catching up, man.
I also want to thank everyone for tuning in. If you want to hear more episodes of the Hoopside Podcast with guest appearances from players, coaches, executives, and fellow media members such as Fred Katz, you can like and subscribe to it on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and anywhere else you listen to podcasts. You can also keep up with my tweets on Twitter, at Mike A. Scotto. And also don't forget to give Fred Katz a follow. He's at Fred Katz. Until next time, I'm your host, Michael Scotto, wishing you and yours all the best.